Yes, welcome indeed to the HSA. This is RPPFM. Hi everyone, I'm Brendan Telfer in the studio this morning with the lovely Paula Dunn. Good morning, Paula. How are you travelling?
Very well, thanks, Brendan.
Very good to
see
you.
Great morning this morning.
Lovely morning, Paula. Just a beautiful day, is it not?
It is.
The Age Stage, let me remind you, is a program in which we look at issues and matters affecting older Australians. It is made possible with the generous support of the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that regional difference and alternative. We love them very much indeed. We thank our supporters very much indeed. Paula, we have a household full, a studio full of people. Who have we got here today? We've got all sorts of people.
Yeah, we've got Kim over there from the Village Baxter.
Kim, welcome back. Lovely to see you.
Thank you. Lovely to be back again.
And Damien from the Village Glen.
Thanks for having me.
Damien Malone, thank you very much indeed, from Tea Tree.
And the lovely Madeline from Village Glen.
Madeline, hello and welcome to you, Madeline.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And lovely. I'm loving that microphone technique, Madeline. That's very, very good. And Damien, we need you just to work that microphone as well. Your very best Elvis Presley impersonations today, if you would be so kind. Thank you so
much.
Okay, that's marvellous. So today we thought, did we not, Paula, that we would talk about
exercise. Yeah, for the aging.
That's very, very good. Exercise for the aging. Exercise generally very important, no matter what your age. But I would imagine for those of advanced years and advancing years, people like myself, it's probably very important.
And me too.
To get mobile. Who wants to kick this off? Kim, you're the regular, you're the old hand, you're the stager. What do you do? What's your emphasis down there
Your
facility?
Emphasis is active aging at any age. So when people first move into our retirement village, they're around 70. So we're looking at keeping people mobile, and Madeline can probably add a little bit more to that. And then we go right through to our frail age residents who can't walk, but we still try and keep them active with chair exercises and those things.
So that helps with their cognitive ability, doesn't it? With their learning, even if it's a step or a movement. Would that be right, Madeline? You know, that helps with the process, doesn't it? Yeah.
Come up, Madeline.
Absolutely. There are so many important parts of exercising, not only mentally but physically, of course. We all know the importance of exercise and how it affects us mentally, and it's the type of exercise that you do. There's so many different types of exercise, and you need to exercise every muscle virtually in your body if you possibly can, including your heart and lungs, strength training for bone density, mobility, because there's so many things that we do that need us to different movements, walking, reaching, twisting and turning, and that mobility is something that's very important. For falls prevention as well, where we are in space, our proprioception in our day-to-day life changes as we age too. So all of those things are important to maintain, as well as having a bit of fun at the same time.
And what about you, Damien? You also would be upholding all these theories, no doubt?
Absolutely. Even when someone moves into residential care, no matter what their level of ability, it's really important that we keep people quite mobile and quite active and engage them from a social point of view. It helps with their mental health, and indeed also helps with preventing things like falls, helps with cognition and behaviour management, particularly in the early afternoons.
And you coming, of course, from Tea Tree as you do, so I guess it would be this care and this physicality would be a little bit more specialised for you. Are you mindful of that?
Absolutely. So we obviously cater for people that have a wide range of impairments and also abilities. So therefore, we have to tailor our program through our physiotherapists, our care staff, and our activities program to a wide range of people's abilities.
So are we allowed to put a time frame on this? I mean, are we talking all your residents at Tea Tree? Absolutely everyone, no matter what their age, no matter what their condition, is going to be assessed by you for some sort of physical activity, are they?
Absolutely. So everyone who comes into our residential care, and certainly this is common across the industry, would have an assessment by a physiotherapist or a registered nurse and a program put into place to help maintain the skills and abilities that they have and to minimise deterioration.
So what about, Damien, what about people who have, you know, residents that have dementia or Alzheimer's, you know, and that, you know, they can't take instructions very well? Tell me how that goes.
Sure. So certainly people with cognitive impairment, it's really important to keep them active.
Yeah.
It helps with behaviours. It helps with them have a sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of one-on-one, a lot of time spent doing shorter activities with these people with cognitive impairments is really mm-hmm. important. And making sure that it's across the whole course of the day, particularly we find things like sundowning in the evenings,
that it's
really important that people have a busy, active life so that they're more tired, and that helps with the behaviours as the day progresses.
Yes.
So, Madeline, how do you go about, you know, you are sort of responsible for the actual involvement with these clients of yours. How do you go about organising your day or your investment of your time and getting them to move, to get active?
Right. Well, when they move to the Village Glen, if they wish to use the gymnasium, then they seek a doctor's certificate of approval first. And then I spend about an hour with each resident if they're interested in using the gymnasium.
So this is a one-on-one?
One-on-one, absolutely. And I can assess their abilities and injuries, whether they have, because so many of them had knee replacements or hip replacements, or they have problems with heart problems and that sort of thing. So I assess them and I work out what they're able to do in the gymnasium. And so some are able to use all the equipment. Some can just use light equipment. Some just use resistance training bands that help with their balance. I provide them with different activities for their balance, like balance boards, balance beams, fit balls. I encourage them to think outside the square in terms of their arms, you know, using different coordination activities, using their brains, because that's what it is. It's about opposite arms and opposite legs.
Yep.
And,
activating, you know, both sides.
Mm. And we even do, once they've had that assessment, then they are able to use the gymnasium independently with a partner, because they have to have a buddy in the gymnasium. But I run structured classes 5 times a week.
For group
training, yes. Okay. So I do group training, and in that time I organise different activities. So it's usually 10 different stations where they will do maybe a football squat and a bench press. And if they're unable to do that, then they just stand there and do a gentle squat or some step-ups and just variety of activities.
Village Glen, of course, you have some fantastic facilities down there. Mm. You have your pool, you have your gymnasium, you have your space where everybody can work out. And also, I guess, you can take them on lovely walks in and around the facilities as well.
Absolutely. Mm. I specifically do work within the gymnasium, but with that, having said that, then it's preparation for them to do those outdoor activities like playing golf, bowling, croquet. So all those activities outside the gymnasium, they need to have mobility and strength and balance.
And what about you over at the Village Baxter, Kim? What are you providing for your folks? I haven't seen quite as many facilities over there. I haven't had a chance.
We have a full bowling green, a full croquet green. We've got a gym that we also do indoor bowls classes. We have gentle exercise classes from seated exercises right through to yoga and quite physical group exercise classes, all for our independent units. We also have walking groups. So people can walk but have the safety of actually a group of people around them. So if they stumble or feel a bit unwell, we have a number of walking tracks within the village, but also have seats at various locations, just so people that have cardiac and heart issues can go for a walk and then stop and have a rest and get a drink and then go for a bit further caters for all different levels of fitness.
And I suppose you would have to be monitoring the health of some of your patients as well, because some of them would have certain conditions that you need to be mindful of before you put them out in some sort of regime.
Absolutely. Yeah, we encourage everyone to talk to their doctor first before they start on any of the exercise programs. But the good thing about bowling and croquet and those sorts of things are there's a lot of adaptive devices that you can use to still participate. Like my uncle lives at the village and he plays bowling, but he can't bend anymore. So he has an extended arm that helps him bowl.
Yes,
so he's still walking up and down.
Yeah.
And getting some exercise, whereas, you know, if he didn't have that extended arm device, he couldn't actually bowl.
Yeah.
And just talking about sort of team sports there, if I may for a moment, Damien, as well, if I just get you to lean into the microphone. I mean, the involvement and I suppose the group initiative of sport and also physical exercise might be important as well in terms of trying to build up some sort of camaraderie and belonging to a space and a place?
Absolutely. I think one of the critical things with exercise, whether it be in the retirement living setting or in the residential aged care, it's about that social interaction. It's about people getting out, being engaged with each other, building support networks, building people they can lean on and friendships. And all of that's really important then for their mental health and wellbeing.
Mm, mm.
You're listening to The Age Stage coming to you live on RPPFM 98.7 and 98.3 across the Mornington Peninsula. Today we're talking about sort of physical activity and how it affects us as we get on in years. I was just wondering, Madeline, as well, do you have specific design courses, or you have to be adaptive to your different people? They have different skill sets at different ages, or how do you go about designing your programs?
Absolutely. I design my programs such that I have certain workstations, and some are able to do each activity that I set for them, but others are unable to do that. So in terms of some of them, they may have to sit down doing the exercises, they may not be able to perform some of the exercises that I give them, but others are able to do more. So I'm always adapting for them because everybody is so different. Mm. Some have very strong arms or legs, and others are unable they have to sit down to do most of their exercises. So I just adapt according to the person and their own abilities. And so it's even though I set a set program, but they often change. Mm-hmm. And I'm often moving them around, or they, as long as they're doing something. And
do you use a hydro pool?
No, we don't have one.
You don't have a pool?
No, okay. We don't. No, mm-hmm. No. There is a pool, and they do water aerobics as well. They do that 2 or 3 times a week as well.
So. Good. Yeah, I love the microphone technique. Thank you very much indeed, Madeline. That's beautiful. Yeah, you're just going to stay up close and get a little bit personal with that microphone for us today. We've got lots of people in here. You tuned up to The Age Stage. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a lot more to come. We'll see you on the other side of this break. This is RPPFM. We're broadcasting across the Mornington Peninsula. Our frequencies are 98.7 and 98.3. And it's lovely to have your company today for The Age Stage, a program which we've designed with the help of our buddies from the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that regional alternative to The Age Stage, a program that we've designed to look at some of the issues affecting older Australians. And today we're having a look at activity, physical activity, health and well-being. We have in the studio Madeline, we have Damien in here with us, and also Kim Jackson, who is the executive manager of the Village Baxter. Madeline is working to and from the Village Glen, and from Tea Tree it is Damien Malone who is joining us in the studio today. Kim Jackson, Village Baxter. I mean, obviously a very important element for anybody in any condition of life is physical activity, of course, and it is something that you guys take pretty seriously, huh?
Absolutely. One of the big drivers of keeping people active and exercising and keeping their muscle tone is fear of falling over. Mm. There's like an imaginary line in life where you stop falling over and you start having falls.
Yeah.
And the more active you can be and maintain your muscle tone, your bone density, the less likely you are to fall over.
Does that mean that you sort of try and keep up reflexive skill as well? I mean, if you are falling, that you can break a fall or you can cushion a fall? Is that important as well?
It's not part of our particular exercise program. We're more into maintaining people's ability to walk, basically. Mm. We're not looking for people to run or do any significant exercising, but to be able to walk safely.
Particular exercises you do to maintain balance? Like, I know physiotherapists are really keen on you doing some sort of standing on one leg for a certain amount of time, even 5 minutes a day. Yeah. They say that really improves your balance quite dramatically.
The answer is it depends. In our independent units, the programs are very much tailored on someone's ability, and that is a one-on-one thing, very much like what Village Glen have.
Yeah.
And the same in our aged care facilities. Our physiotherapists will set up a program specific to someone's abilities, what we want to maintain, and we have balance beams, so people can stand on one foot but actually have their something to hold on to.
As you were here last week when we talked to our stroke victim, and she made an amazing recovery, and you know her story was quite outstanding.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
So I guess people who have had those sorts of issues would all be different in their, you know, need to rehabilitate and what sort of exercise they do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Madeline, which brings me on to a question. I mean, different people have different propensity to do physical exercise as well, don't they? In the case of, as we were hearing from Paula Kathleen Jordan last week, extraordinary determination to overcome the affliction of a massive and catastrophic stroke. She did it because it was basically willpower and she wanted to get up out of her hospital bed. Not all of the people you work for would have that sort of determination. How do you go about inspiring people to keep active, to keep moving?
I think because it gives them much more quality of life. And so I have different, some people are very fit and they have been in gymnasiums all their lives, so they just want to maintain their fitness. But others are coming back from heart surgery, or they're coming back from, or they have certain injuries that need, you know, specific treatment. I've got one fellow who can hardly walk. He's got Parkinson's and he comes in, he sits on the bike. He does just a little bit of exercise, resistance training with a band, rubber band, and then he shuffles around a little bit. But he is so determined to keep moving. And I think that's the important thing, you know. It's just, and it's not, I don't go out into the air, of course, and draw people. It's those who are interested in exercise, who want to maintain their life.
So it's not mandatory as part of their living. It is
absolutely not. No, it's and when you consider how many residents there are in the Village Glen, I think there's over 1,000. Am I right?
Yes, 760.
Right. Close enough. I would have a tiny proportion of those people coming to the. So it's people really who have either been in exercise programs before. I get a lot of people who've come from other, you know, from outside gymnasiums, and they just want to keep up with their fitness
It's programs. So good for their mental ability, isn't it?
I think it is mental. And I do have some people who come just from the social aspect.
Yes.
They come just because they might not do a lot, but they'll do a lot of talking, but they're doing some sort of exercise, and I think it's about fun and variety as well. We always have music in the background, and quite often they'll break into song and sometimes even into dance. And as they dance around the gymnasium. So it is about that fun and variety.
Damien, can I ask you, what about medication affecting people's propensity and ability to be coordinated or to be physical and get out and about? I mean, you'd be treating some people, I'm sure, with some pretty heavy medication. I mean, is that affecting people's propensity to do exercise?
I think certainly medication is an important factor. We, across aged care, would be attempting to keep people on the least amount of medication that we need to, when we'd be looking at alternatives such as exercise and that to help us to do that. A good example is pain management. So we have a lot of people with osteoarthritis and those types of pains, and what we find is by getting a good balance between alternate therapies such as heat and those kinds of things, a lower level of medication, and then things like exercise programs, strength training, even chair-based exercises all help to manage that pain better.
And just taking up a point that Paula was making early on, what about people with the onset of things like a dementia and stuff like that? I mean, are you insisting that these sorts of patients do undertake these sorts of programs, or do you just lay off and let them set their own agenda?
Look, so certainly we try and engage with everyone. We think that everyone should have some degree of active lifestyle, because it's good for their mental health, it's good for their physical health and well-being. Much like in the villages, that's tailored to the individual as to how much that they're involved. It may be going to the choir group and just being involved in some actions that go along with that. That's a good active movement. It could be actually going into the physio gym and being involved in a full-on physio program. It could be as simple as the golf group and going and having a putt of golf on the green at the Village Glen, or in the day room at Tea Tree.
I'm just wondering about you, Kim, as well. I mean, if people are showing signs, do you organise your residents into competitive teams? Can they form a bowling club? And can they?
Oh, absolutely.
That sounds fun.
Yes.
Or a tennis team or something like that?
We do. Our Village Baxter Bowling Club is registered with Bowls Victoria, and we compete. We have two pennant teams, and it's very serious business.
I'm sure it is.
And, yeah, there's lots of groups like that are part of larger associations in retirement villages all over the place that compete and enjoy that camaraderie and socialisation with other villagers.
That'd be pretty neat, wouldn't it? Sort of living and representing and being part of the same team as well. I could imagine why they would get very excited.
Oh, they do. They have a uniform, a newsletter. It's very serious.
Wow. We know. Fantastic. We run the bowling show here. Yes. Very serious.
We have staff resident bowling on the 8th of December this year. We staff versus residents.
Wow.
Yes, that's always good fun too. Yeah. I won last year. I was very proud. Yes, my team.
Congratulations, Kim. That's fantastic. Madeline, what about you? Do you organise teams as well out of the Glen?
No, I don't organise any active teams because there is so much to offer within the Glen itself, right. In terms of groups and bowling and croquet and that sort of thing. So I'm specifically involved with just running the program in the gymnasium. But I encourage people not only to do it in the gymnasium, but I give them options and things to do in their own homes because you can do so much outside the gym. And incidental exercise is very important too, in terms of, you know, balance, so they can stand on one foot while they're brushing their teeth or doing the dishes, and push-ups on the kitchen bench and things like that. So there's lots of incidental type of exercise which I encourage people to do all the time.
So I'm a very active 70-year-old and all of a sudden I've taken up this propensity for push bike riding and I'm absolutely blitzing everybody around the compound down there. Would you be encouraging me to join the local cycle group, for instance, and enter the Tour de France and the Masters?
Maybe not.
Maybe watch it on TV.
Yeah. There are walking groups as well, which I don't personally organise, but I see there's people who do walking groups around the Glen who are unable to actually leave the village, its compound itself, they have little bowling green competitions, and the ladies there just do a little bit of, you know, half an hour putting, and then they go inside the clubhouse and have a cup of coffee. So there are definitely a lot of group activities, you know, that they can be involved in.
Mm. Yeah, and look, I certainly think whether it's a retirement village or a residential facility, it's a community within a community. So there's always interaction with what's going on in the wider community, and there's always the opportunity to join in and do bigger and better things that are out there for people that want to, and we certainly encourage that.
So let's say there's a new resident comes in. Are they approached... are they first assessed of their ability, you know, to exercise, and then are they approached to see what they like to do? Like, tell us how that goes, how you do that.
Well, when a resident and when they move into the Village Glen, they have new residence meetings.
Okay.
And so which I've never been to one, but they tell them what is involved, what they can do about the gymnasium, what's involved in becoming part of the gym programs. And it's entirely up to them if they want to join the gym or if they want to have an assessment or not. So it's their choice whether they come and join the classes or whether they come and do their own individual programs.
But so you don't insist, sort of, you know?
Definitely not, no. It's not. It's actually a personal thing.
Okay.
They're encouraged, given encouragement to join all the different clubs. There's so many activities they can join, but it's not. But if they do want to use the gymnasium, they have to have an assessment with me first.
Mm. Yeah. So certainly at Village Glen, there's a social manager that manages the social life, and part of her role is to meet with new people and talk to them about the wide range of activities that are available at the village, and to get to know them a little bit, I guess, which the salespeople and the village manager also do. And they would then direct them to what's available within or within the community.
So that's where you'd find if somebody was a bit depressed or, you know, really introverted, you would realise those things then and then encourage them to...
Absolutely. Purchasing into a village, and I'm sure Kim will back me up on this, is a big investment for someone to be moving home and all that. So there's a lot of time spent with people before they move into the village to learn about what it is and what their particular fit is to make sure that they fit the village and that the village fits them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And there's lots of incidental exercise that can happen when someone joins an activity program, because we have a very active craft group, and a couple of times a week the craft ladies meet and they make things for our open days. And many of those ladies are quite frail, but they still make that twice a week, the walk down to the craft room. So we know that, you know, at least twice a week they're getting two good walks back and forth, and there's lots of that sort of incidental exercise. And for people out in the community, there's a lot of shopping centres that have walking groups early in the morning before all the shops open. That's safe, it's flat floor, it's not walking out in public where you might get bumped over by a push bike or something like that.
Yeah, great idea.
Interesting. Thank you very much indeed, Tim. Lovely catching up with you all, and we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us here today. Kim Jackson, thank you very much indeed. Do pass on our very best to everybody down there at the Village Baxter for us. Damien Malone, thank you very much indeed for coming by and joining us from Tea Tree today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much indeed. And also Madeline Bodle, thank you very much indeed for coming up from the Village Glen today. Madeline, lovely to see you here.
Thank you for having me.
And we hope that you newbies, Paul and I, might be able to extend the hand of friendship, and yes, that we might be able to encourage you up here at some other occasion.
We will.
Kim, you're an old hand at this.
I am. I'll be back next week.
Oh, you yeah. will be back next week. This is the Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula, and well and truly and far beyond. When we come back after the break, we're going to be talking to stroke survivor Lindy Cook, and a little bit later on, Robin Seymour, about older drivers on the road. This is the Age Stage, made possible by our friends at the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that regional alternative. We'll have a break and be back with more. RPFM across the Mornington Peninsula, this is the Age Stage. Great to have your company this Thursday morning. Well, last week, as you are well aware, if you were listening to the program, you will know that it was National Stroke Week. And this week, to continue that series and also the importance of your awareness and our awareness about stroke, it is important that we talk to people that have survived and are perhaps intimately involved with it. It's our great pleasure to introduce to the microphone Lindy Cook, who is herself a stroke survivor. Lindy, welcome to RPFM and welcome to the Age Stage.
Thanks very much, Brendan.
You survived a stroke, Lindy. It must have been a very frightening experience. How did you go about that process, and how did you get all your cognition back and your skills?
Okay. Unfortunately, Brendan, I had my stroke in the middle of the night, and it wasn't. My daughter found me the next morning, so I didn't have any chance of getting to hospital quickly, so I had a lot of
Problems
with a lot of damage. I can't use my left hand or left arm. But I had a lot of rehab, and I'm able to walk again and live independently. So,
Lindy, how long ago was it that you had your stroke?
It was 9 years.
Wow. And so was that constant rehabilitation that you've been having?
I'm still having, yes, but it's usually after about 3 months.
Wow.
You don't have much more progress.
Yeah. Sort of.
So in your case, they must be seeing signs of good rehabilitation, obviously, that they're hanging in there and bringing you along, Lindy.
We're always told never give up with stroke.
Mm.
So years and years later, you can have a little more cap recovery. So,
do they give you a long-term prognosis, or is it entirely up to you as to how much improvement you get with the rehabilitation that you're doing?
No, they said, this is as good as it will get, and I'm not able to use my left arm or hand forever now. And I have adjusted to life with that, but I will keep trying just personally because I'm a bit of a fighter.
Good. That's good.
That seems to be the recurring theme, Lindy. Mm. We were speaking to a stroke survivor last week as well, and it seemed to be down to the intent and the passion to overcome the side effects of the stroke that is the difference between those that can rehabilitate themselves and those that perhaps might be struggling a little.
That's right.
Mm, it's such an unknown area, isn't it? I mean,
I just feel like I can make the best of life, and I'm still here, and yes, I can contribute to the community and my family still, which is so important.
Mm.
And that contribution, of course, involves Stroke Week as well. You are involved, and you do mentor and advise people on stroke and how to recognise it and how to cope with
it. Certainly do. I I've only just moved to the Mornington Peninsula, but I was running a stroke support group, and we'd organise a stall at Westfield at Knox during Stroke Week, and I also helped with Blokes Day out at Sandown Racetrack, which is in March, where we do blood pressure checks.
Well done. So did you have any sort of symptoms before your stroke that you can, looking back, that, were sort of little flags that,
I was born with a hole in my heart, and I had atrial fibrillation, a regular heartbeat, which is what caused my stroke. But I had no idea I was a candidate for a stroke, but now I know to warn anyone that has atrial fibrillation or an irregular heartbeat to get on blood thinners to prevent stroke.
Because the side effect of the arterial fibrillation, as I understand it, is that the increased stroke rate of the heart means that it doesn't evacuate all of the full volume of blood, and therefore some of it can congeal a little bit in the lower section of the heart, causing the disturbance and the blockage.
That's completely correct, Brendan. And some of these clots picked off and went to my brain, which caused the stroke.
You're obviously very brave in confronting this thing. You suggested that you've moved down to the Mornington Peninsula, so perhaps we can encourage you to come by the radio station and or get involved in Stroke Week next year. Do you have any plans to do that?
Definitely, yes. I'd like to form a stroke support group down here.
Oh, wonderful.
And what brings you down to the Mornington Peninsula? To be closer to your kids? Or
I've got a daughter, married daughter, and a granddaughter down here, so...
Well, welcome to the Mornington Peninsula. It's lovely to have you down here, Lindy. It's a beautiful part of the world, as I'm sure. The wonderful thing is that despite this stroke, you are able to move down here of your own volition and have your own independence as well. It must be very heartening for you.
Fantastic. I've actually moved, I don't know if you know, the Village Glen.
Yes, we do.
We know the Village Glen. In fact, they're one of the supporters of this wonderful radio station and this radio program. And without the Village Glen, we wouldn't be speaking with you today.
Oh, right. Well, you can tell I'm a new person.
Well, it's fantastic to welcome you, and hopefully you might tune up the radio station and or the radio program from time to time as well. What about your work within inside the Village Glen then? Then perhaps you might be doing a little bit of work with some of the residents that you're getting to know?
I've only been here 3 months, so I'm still doing all that, finding my doctor and physio.
Well, it must be awesome, given your medical background, that you can do this and you've got this, you know, significant new life to get used to. It must be very exciting, very thrilling for you.
It's fantastic. It's a new lease of life.
Yeah, it's quite an amazing place down there at the Village Glen, isn't it?
It is.
Mm.
And with all the wonderful, and we've just been talking about physical health and well-being in our later years as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess with all the wonderful facilities that they've got down there, you probably will be mindful and availing yourself of them.
I sure will. I'm only 56, so I'm a little bit young for the village, but already I've made friends and been to a lot of the groups. So.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, that is fantastic, and I think you're going to have a wonderful and caring environment. And so, of course, as we learnt last week, the most important things as far as stroke are concerned, if you have the chance, is to remember the FAST rules and laws, which is face, arms, can they be moved? The face, is it showing signs of distortion? And listen to speech, and if any of those symptoms are presenting, then it's on to time and try and get some help as quickly as possible.
That is so important, Brendan, yes.
Indeed. In your case, as you were saying, Lindy, having the stroke at night meant that it was a little while before they could get you some assistance, but nevertheless, it sounds like the intervention and your determination have got you into a very good place.
And I had wonderful family support.
That's really important too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Lindy, welcome to the H Stage, the radio program. Welcome to the Mornington Peninsula, and welcome to your new home down at the Village Glen.
Thank you.
I'm sure they're going to look after you very, very well, and we would look forward to meeting up with you again at some stage in the future.
Thank you very much, Brendan.
Thanks, Lindy.
Thanks, Paula.
Appreciate your time very much indeed. Thank you, Lindy.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye now. Lindy Cook, as you heard, stroke survivor on the Age Stage, and although National Stroke Week might have ended last week, we have always got to be vigilant about stroke, and it is a very serious condition. And remember those important rules. FAST, look at the face. Is it showing any signs of disturbance or distortion? Arms, can they be moved? Listen to speech, and if you think or you have any concerns, it is time to react, and react very quickly, because if you can get to medical assistance and medical support, that intervention and the timing of it is very, very important in your rehabilitation from stroke.
Mm, she was only young too, wasn't she?
She was 56.
Wow.
Only 56 now. Yes, so yeah. This occurred some years ago.
Yeah.
This is the Age Stage. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Brendan Toff in the studio with you alongside of Paula Dunn. We're going to take another break. And when we come back, older drivers on the road. How are we going? Can we be trusted? And are we doing the right thing? Find out when the Age Stage returns in just a minute. You're tuned up to RPPFM, your local radio station down here on the Mornington Peninsula, and well beyond as well. Let me tell you that our frequencies of 98.7 and 98.3 are travelling extremely well at the moment. Of course, you can always stream us, get online, and in some circumstances, even watch us on television these days. Let me tell you that the Age Stage is proudly brought to you by our friends at the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living. I'm Brendan Telfer. Paula Dunn is in the studio with me. And Paula, today we're going to be speaking to somebody that knows a lot about driving and roads and cars. Robin Seymour is the executive director there at Vic Roads and is going to be joining us on the line. Robin, are you there?
Good afternoon, Robin.
Robin, thank you very much indeed for joining us. We hear and we see in the newspapers quite a lot made about older drivers. Are the stories true or not?
What stories are you talking about in relation to older drivers?
Well, sometimes we see that the younger media seem to suggest that older drivers, such as myself, are a little bit of a problem on the roads, and we make me not quite as alert as we once were, or we tend to drive slowly or too carefully.
Generally, older drivers are really safe drivers. They are cautious. They obey the road rules. They don't tend to drive. As people get older, they tend to restrict their driving and choose not to drive at really busy times or in poor weather.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, older drivers are actually really safe and good drivers.
Robin, what is the definition of an older driver? Where do we become? What age do we become an older driver?
That's a very good question, and different people have different definitions. Some of the definitions say because of increased frailty that anyone aged over 60 is considered an old driver. But
oh dear.
Which makes that a very large cohort of the Victorian population,
absolutely.
Really.
Absolutely, yes, definitely.
And there are
other definitions that talk about older drivers being over 70 or over 75. But really there's probably the aged, and the older aged, really. Mm. There's probably three fairly discrete cohorts of people. Mm. But in terms of driving, it isn't necessarily age that's the factor.
Mm.
It's our health, and our health can deteriorate, and we can have issues with our health that can affect our driving at any age.
We can, yes.
Obviously, as we age, we tend to develop more issues with our health, so mm. that can become a problem. But we know that of all the people that come through our medical review process at Vic Roads, 43% of those are aged under 60.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So, Robin, what is the view of Vic Roads about older drivers? Does it? I suppose you're not allowed by legislation to discriminate. Are you encouraging everybody to stay on the roads as long as possible, provided they are safe? What is your philosophy?
Vic Roads' policy is that people should continue to drive for as long as they're safe to do so.
But obviously
with that comes a responsibility for all of us, regardless of what age we are, to make sure we are fit to drive. But being able to drive for as long as we can is really important in maintaining our connection to the community and our capacity to do all the things that we really enjoy in life. So we're keen to support people to continue to drive for as long as they're able to and as long as they're fit to.
Mm. And what are your thoughts, Robin, on, you know, retesting as we get older?
So the Vic Roads policy on that is that we don't support mandatory retesting. But we have a requirement in Victoria that if people have a health condition that might
impact their driving, that they need to report that to VicRoads. And then what we will do is we will work with them and ensure that we can monitor that and ensure that people continue to drive for as long as they're able to. But if they need some assistance in determining when perhaps they may need to limit or stop driving, then we take that responsibility very seriously.
So there is no mandatory testing of people over a certain age?
No, not in Victoria. There's no mandatory testing.
Would you envisage that might become a policy in future years?
Well, the research and evidence that we have seen is that it isn't about age. It's that health conditions can develop at any age, and there isn't a lot of evidence at this point to support mandatory testing of people over a certain age.
It concerns me sometimes. I mean, I'm in my 60s, Robin, and it concerns me when I see quite frail elderly people in great big four-wheel drives. That really bothers me. You know, that they the difficulty they seem to have to handle those vehicles.
Well, one of the things we know is that as we age, we become more frail and our bone density is less. So so our vulnerability in a crash becomes greater. So actually, what's really important for older people is to make sure they're in safe cars. So that doesn't have to be a brand new car, but it's really important that people are choosing cars that will protect them in the event of something going wrong. And that doesn't necessarily mean a really big car like a four-wheel drive. There's lots of really safe cars now that are smaller cars as well that people might be more comfortable in.
You sound like you've got a very caring philosophy and outlook on the older driver, Robin.
I am very supportive of older drivers and ensuring that we support older people to maintain their mobility, whether that's in the car or at some point if they have to give up driving, then supporting them in that transition, which can be very difficult.
It must be very confronting. Do you see a lot of that?
Well, we certainly through our medical review area do work with older people as well as younger people with medical conditions around their driving, and for anyone at any age being told they can't drive anymore is a really, really traumatic and difficult thing to be told. So one of the things that's really important is to plan for our future mobility for a time when perhaps we may no longer be able to drive. And as part of that, have conversations with our friends and families so that they are talking to us about how they think they're we're going in terms of our driving, and start to look at how we can access other forms of transport and make that decision for ourselves so that it isn't someone else telling us now it's time to stop.
Yes, I guess our reflexes change as we get older, we know that, and we hear a lot of incidents where, you know, the driver who is, you know, elderly has hit the accelerator instead of the brake and things like that, and not that it's that often, but we do hear of those events, don't we?
Yes, that's true, and hitting the accelerator instead of the brake with older people, it's not just older people who experience that. That's also an issue for young, inexperienced drivers as well. And in fact, other drivers, when they're really stressed and have a lot of things going on, that can become sort of overloaded and do the same thing. So we tend to see it more in young drivers and older drivers, but it also happens to other people as well. It's just that in terms of the stories that we tend to hear about in the media, they tend to relate, unfortunately, to older people.
Indeed they do, and I just wonder about the selectivity sometimes of those stories by the media, Robin. You're absolutely right. Just finally, Robin, before we let you go, what about the advent of technology and the driverless car? Soon we'll all be able to sit back and let the computer drive us from A to B anyway. We'll be driving well into our 110s.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yes, it would. Finally, chauffeur-driven.
There is some amazing technology beginning to develop that will support those automated vehicles, which for people who are older or who have disabilities or who really struggle to be able to drive, will really support their potential ongoing mobility, which is really exciting.
Exciting, yes.
It is indeed. And combined with your policy, which seems to be very supportive of all drivers, it looks like we might have a long driving future ahead of us all. Robin Seymour, who is a spokesperson for VicRoads, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Age Stage today, Robin.
Thanks, Robin.
Thanks very much for having me.
Delighted to meet you. Thank you so much indeed. Robin Seymour there, just wrapping up this edition of the Age Stage as well, at least this segment of it, because on the other side of the break, we're going to be hearing from one of our friends who we haven't spoken to for a little while. Tom Camp is back, and he's got some news of an exciting edition of the Age Stage coming up.
Very exciting numbers.
Hello, PFM, and thank you very much indeed for your company. Hope you're enjoying the Age Stage this Thursday. Just very quickly before we wrap it up today, thought it might be interesting to invite Tom Camp along, because Tom next week is going to be joining us on a special Age Stage. It's a one-hour special in which Tom Camp takes a look at where this particular sector is going over the next 40 years. There's some very confronting figures, some very alarming figures, but Tom Camp, ever the optimist from Encore Living, the regional alternative, is ever the optimist and believes that we can solve some pretty pressing problems. So, Tom, a little bit of a preview, if you would. What can we expect next week on the program?
Well, we'll be talking population statistics. We'll be talking the challenges of looking after nearly 10 million people in 30 years' time over the age of 65, and the infrastructure issues that we've got to deal with that, investment required into the sector, costs of government to actually look after those particular people.
And most importantly, the options.
Really important, yeah. Look, I'm really confident that the sector can actually deliver the answers as long as we continue to talk and work with government and work with the finance institutions and so on. So I'm really keen on that. I think we've identified the key issues, and once you've identified the key issues, you can work backwards. And I'm a relatively simple man. It only takes money. And my attitude is the investment is there to be able to make it happen on the basis that we put together a good business plan, and we provide the solutions that appeal to this particular age demographic.
It's going to have to be a pretty sturdy business plan, though, because looking at some of your figures, projecting into the future, 40 years from now, what is the ballpark figure that needs to be spent?
I think across the various sectors, we'll probably see somewhere in the order of $300 billion invested into infrastructure just to look after the aged care, retirement, and the emerging manufactured housing estate industry. But in saying that, you're going to be looking after somewhere in the order of just under a million people. And those million people will be utilising their assets and their income streams along with government-supported pensions to make sure that they live a good life. And when you consider that the government's got potentially, on a per annum basis, up to $400 billion of cost across retired people in healthcare, pensions and community care services and so on, we've got to make this work. We've got to have people invest in their own retirement, and we've got to put together good financial solutions across the different living choices to make sure people do invest in their future well-being.
Because those futures are very, very important. They're important to you and I, Paula.
They certainly
because
are.
They're basically the way we are going to structure our lives going ahead in the next 20 years. So if you are interested in your future, what options you might have and where the whole industry is going, tune up to the Age Stage this time next week when we present a special edition of the program with Tom Camp from Encore Living, of course, that regional perspective. We thank everybody who contributes to the Age Stage. It's always fantastic. We always do seem to speak to some amazing people,
don't we?
Incredible. And next week, of course, is no exception. We thank our friends, the Village Baxter, the Village Gan, and Encore Living. Do join us next week at this time, because we will have Tom Camp in the studio, a special one-hour special on Encore Living and Tom Camp's future predictions 40 years from now. Where will we be? What do we need to spend? And what sort of a lifestyle will that give us?
That'll be great. I think I'll take the caravan to Cooktown or something.
I'm hooking it up for you, Paula.